morning and welcome to CrossLink Radio, where we talk about health from the eye teeth on down. My name is Shirley Gutkowski, and I am the host of CrossLink Radio. And today we're going to be talking about oral health and long-term care. We haven't talked about it for a while, and I thought it would be good to reapproach this issue with an eye for a solution that hasn't necessarily really been explored. On Wednesday this week, I will be doing a presentation for an organization called Advancing Excellence in Long-Term Care. And their charge, their reason for being, is that they was kind of a quasi-governmental organization, and they got together to create some standards so that nursing homes who wanted to participate could sign up to participate, and then they would struggle to achieve the goal set out by the entire group. And then more and more nursing homes joined in, and the organization, Advancing Excellence in Nursing Homes, became more of a permanent fixture. So it currently has employees and goals, and it's just growing and growing. So if you're looking for a nursing home, I would encourage you to find one that is participating in this Advancing Excellence in Nursing Homes organization. It's they've got a pretty dynamite website. It's very comprehensive. It's very complete. And I think that you would do well by looking at that site and finding a facility that is participating. Guess what they're not participating in, though? They have no oral care standards at all. To kind of do a little history lesson, Angie Stone and I went, when we were doing our initial education of these nursing homes, spent a lot of time at, it was Rock Haven, but we did a lot of our stuff there. It was close for Angie, and it wasn't too far for me. And so that was kind of our little home base for a while there. And as we were leaving one day, I saw that they had a little, I don't know, it's just a piece of paper really, on a bulletin board that said that they are participating in this Advancing Excellence thing. So we went home and we looked it up, and we're like, this is who we should be targeting. But that was a long time ago. And so at that time, there weren't very many facilities that were participating. So in the United States today, we have about 16,000 care facilities, and I don't know, maybe 10% or 12% are participating, which is not a huge number. Oh, maybe it's a little bit more than that, because that seems super low. Either way, the numbers are growing. And these care facilities are noticing that there are ways to improve, that there are steps to improvement, which has not been really mapped out before. So my goal is to just make these administrators aware that oral care, that it's so important that we can't leave it to undereducated, fearful nursing home assistants, nursing assistants. So that's what I'm doing on Wednesday. And I thought I would take a little bit of time today, kind of go over what I will be presenting for them. This is a little presentation about caregivers, oral care guilt relief. Because I think that these nursing homes, these certified nursing assistants that work in nursing homes have proven themselves to be very diligent and very caring, but they can't do oral care. They can't. We know that one of the leading killers of the residents in nursing homes is pneumonia, and very often that pneumonia is aspiration pneumonia, where the residents have a little trouble swallowing, or they cough wrong or something, and then a big chunk of the biofilm from their teeth gets flying down into their lungs and causes a pneumonia. or just some fluids or, I don't know, foods or something gets down into their lungs. It's not a good way to die. Angie and I don't believe that it's very dignified to die of pneumonia in a nursing home. There are plenty of better ways to go if you ask us. It can be avoided. That's the thing, because the researchers are pretty clear that oral health is to be among the most common risk factors. Poor oral health is the most common risk factor of acquired pneumonia in nursing homes. And along with difficulty swallowing, pretty much assures a person to have pneumonia. Recent studies have also demonstrated that the microbacterium and fungi present in the plaque of the residents with poor oral hygiene can be found in the lung aspirates of patients with pneumonia, and that those organisms are associated with poor oral hygiene practices in the long-term care facilities in both people with and without teeth. And a lot of dental hygienists look at this level of oral care as being elder abuse. These people cannot take care of their own teeth. They can't take care of their mouth. They need help holding a spoon. Why wouldn't somebody take more initiative to help keep their teeth clean? When you think about how much money people are spending on their teeth in the world, in the United States, you have to know that this is a situation that is dire, and people want to have nice clean teeth even when they don't know who they're talking to. So not doing oral care is a real gamble. And the death from pneumonia and compounding factors associated with pneumonia are preventable, and we can really make a better impact on all of this stuff by just increasing oral care. And the CNAs are not, I don't think, the ones to do that. So it's this whole conversation kind of revolves around oral biofilm, and that for the purposes of the discussion here with these nursing home administrators is that plaque and biofilm are interchangeable terms. And biofilm is always the root of all evil, but the intention is always to just remove it and just to come up with better and better ways to get rid of the biofilm using mechanical actions. So I think we need to take just a little sidestep here and start to talk about the problem with teeth. What's wrong? What's going on here? The problem is, in long-term care, in days gone by, nobody had teeth left. And so it was just a matter of taking dentures out, cleaning the dentures, and putting them back in. But we have a substantial decrease in edentulism in long-term care. And I think that that's a really big yahoo to dentistry in general, because we have spent a lot of time and energy trying to find ways to save teeth. And I think that everybody that's listening to this episode is very fully aware that we go to great lengths to save teeth. And then we have to talk a little bit about what the heck are teeth even for. One of the things that we don't ever talk about is the social aspect of teeth. People with teeth, without teeth, or with bad-looking teeth don't smile as often. They don't engage as often. People with dirty teeth don't talk to other people as much. The coating on the tongue is another whole level of problems. Teeth are also necessary for nutrition. You need to be able to chew in order for a lot of different functions to happen in the body. Teeth are also necessary for hydration. Raw foods, the foods that need the most chewing, have the most amount of liquid and most amount of water in them. So it makes them a little bit harder to digest also, especially if you're not chewing them. We look at the face as an indicator for brain attack, commonly known as stroke. So we ask the person to smile. For people with bad teeth or teeth that hurt or their mouth hurts can't smile, and often a bad abscess will cause a face to droop. which has nothing to do with anything. And when we look at the people with in long-term care, when we dental hygienists look at those people and dentists, we're usually pretty appalled at how awful their teeth are and how crazy it is that this is allowed to continue. Pneumonia resides, the bacteria that promotes pneumonia is also present in that oral biofilm. It's not inert. It's not just a food mass. There's complicating factors all over it. In long-term care and in adults with pneumonia, the mortality rate is pretty high. The 30-day mortality rate can be over 20% in a month. And the all-cause mortality for pneumonia patients in a year can be almost 30%. So it's still kind of a big problem. We also know now that H. pylori is living in this oral biofilm. And the World Journal of Gastroenterology in, I think this was 2014, suggested that to prevent or eradicate H. pylori infection, which is the gastric ulcer bacteria, we need to focus on oral hygiene and prevention of oral problems, especially dental calculus and loose teeth. So they even are recognizing that dental hygienists are at least cleaning the teeth is critically important. And when we're talking about long-term care, we also have to talk about saliva and the lack of it in these people who are living in these care facilities, the dependent adults. They often have a lot of medications that they take, and those medications reduce the amount of saliva that is present in their mouth. We need saliva to help our lips move across our teeth when we're talking. We need it to help swallow our food, and we need it to chew even. Saliva is important in buffering the acids that we eat, like orange juice. You know, some real wholesome foods are pretty acidic. Saliva dilutes the sugars in the acids. It helps swallowing and nutrition by coating the food and the oral tissues to allow food to slip through easier. Saliva breaks down the sugars and the complex carbohydrate sugars. That's the first breakdown step is by saliva. Saliva also kills bacteria, and it helps to release flavors that are trapped inside of dry foods. When we're talking about saliva and dry mouth, we have two distinct words that we hear of. Most people talk about something called xerostomia, and they use that term because it starts with an X. It has the word stoma in it, and it sounds really Latin and really like you know what you're talking about. But really, xerostomia is a subjective sensation. And before you even notice that your mouth is dry, you may have lost up to 70% of your saliva. What we really should be talking about is hyposalivary function, which almost sounds as fun and fancy, but it's got a lot more syllables. And that is that there's a lack of salivary gland function. This can come from medication, from radiology, radiology kind of appointments for oral cancer or other cancers where we use radiation therapy. Also from surgeries and different conditions that are associated with hyposalivary function. Hyposalivation is a risk factor for dental caries and periodontal disease, but also for taste disturbances, speaking problems, swallowing problems, poor chewing ability, even malnutrition. Underweight persons were more likely to limit foods that they eat because of mouth dryness. So it can also contribute to weight loss in these care facilities. The government has standards for weight loss, and when the residents lose more weight than what's allowed in the allowable amount of time, they get in a lot of trouble, and it may be due to something as simple as mouth dryness. Dysphagia is the inability to swallow, so that's why they have thickened liquids and stuff like that in these care facilities. and makes it hard for them to even drink regular fluid water. People have difficulty or swallowing have a high risk of malnutrition and even dehydration. And they also have a higher incidence of pneumonia or upper respiratory infections. But we know that intensive oral care reduces the incidence of pneumonia by improving cough reflexes sensitivity in elderly nursing home patients. So here we go. You know, oral care has far-reaching consequences beyond just pearly white teeth and good breath. Xerostomia, or dry mouth, has also increased the odds of that resident having dry lips, a dry throat, dry eyes, skin, and mouth. So it's an indicator of a bunch of different things. People on dialysis often also have a dry mouth because they are restricted in the amount of liquids that they can have during the day. And we need saliva to even keep dentures in the mouth. We need that fluid there to create kind of a suction and help the dentures stick onto the teeth. We have in dentistry created implants initially, I think, even just to hold dentures in. And that's pretty fancy, and most CNAs wouldn't even know what to do with the denture that's snapped in with implants like that. So that's really another facet of this. It's not very complex problem. It's just a multifaceted problem. So who really is caring for the teeth? We know it's the nursing assistant. Some are certified, some are not. They have up to 30 minutes of education in oral care. And it's real easy to brush somebody in your class's teeth. It's easy to brush a 3-year-old's teeth. The most common reason and the most outstanding reason for them not doing oral care is fear. That they are afraid of being bitten. They're afraid of being attacked by the resident. This, I have a picture here of a CNA whose face was bitten by a care resident. They waited for them to come close enough. I think they were even doing oral care. And when they got their face close enough, they turned their head and bit him right in the face. So that's really crazy. They're spit at. Nurses are wondering if they have any recourse. But really, when you think about a dependent adult, and this is their very last place, their very last autonomous act, their only way to protect themselves. They can't talk, they can't communicate any other way, and they're just back down to base reactions. The residents are often resistant and combative. I like to say that they act like a 6-foot-tall, you know, 210-pound 3-year-old. They don't have any other ways of communicating. They purse their lips so that you can't get in. And a lot of times they have to be in restraints. So can oral care even be a priority under the current way that we take care of residents in facilities? The CNAs are doing a lot of things. They're taking care of these residents' emotional needs, medications, they're bathing, dressing, and feeding them. And then we're asking them to work on combative patients who are or non-responsive that bite and spit. And then we give them these substandard toothpaste that don't taste very good and inexpensive toothbrushes with the bristles falling off and the handles are bending. So, you know, we just don't act as if it's a priority because up until now, we've always thought of it as a cosmetic procedure, which is how it's taught in these care facilities. And then to top it off, we put together these care, you know, educational modules that continue to act as though residents in care facilities just lay there and open their mouth and they turn their head and they allow anybody to just brush their teeth. And that's not true. And then we continue to get new and better toothbrushes for the care of the teeth in these dependent adults. And that implies that this is just a mechanical problem and that there's no other way to get rid of this oral biofilm, which of course is not true. And then we also have this idea that 53% of the directors of these care facilities studied in this, I think this was Michigan, said that the residents' oral health was fair to poor, but they were still satisfied with the oral care provided at their facilities, probably because they didn't know what they didn't know. And our goal for teaching oral care is to get these assistants to just brush these people's teeth. They can't do it. They're not prepared. And I found a study the other day that talked about the long-term effects of using oral care aids at a nursing home for elderly dependent residents. And what they did in this study is that they gave a high level of education to a certain group of care of CNAs, and those CNAs then were in charge of oral care. But here it says, and this is something that Angie and I have figured out too, the staff interviewed revealed that it took 2 years for good cooperation and prophylactic routines to be established. 2 years! In 2 years, what we've been noticing is that about 60% of the teeth in these people melt off by 2 years. The average length of stay in a long-term care facility is like 840 whatever days, so it's about 3 years. And so this is nuts. That two-year thing is crazy. And we know that most dental hygienists are in a program that takes 2 years to go through, but we have an intensive care time when we are in these in our classes. Even just knowing how to brush somebody else's teeth, just brushing somebody else's teeth takes a couple of weeks of didactic and lab training. So we have this other study here that the perceptions of oral health adequacy and access in Michigan nursing facilities from 2008. They stated that the greatest perceived barrier were willingness of general and specialty dentists to treat residents at the care facilities. We don't need the care there. We need a dental hygienist there. This Northern Nevada study showed that assisted living residents in Southern Nevada reported difficulty accessing dental services within and outside of the facility. Oral care models to address this unique population should be explored. No kidding. It's extremely frustrating. And we also know that we only need to provide professional mechanical cleaning weekly. So I did some arithmetic, and I know that this arithmetic is kind of loose, but we have about 16,000 nursing homes, and the current number of residents from this 2004 CDC survey is 1.5 million. So we'll just kind of go along with that. We know that we can reduce about 21% of pneumonias by increasing or doing better oral hygiene. And this study here from Vaccine in 2011 showed that direct medical costs total $3.5 billion in pneumonia alone, and that was system-wide. So when we whittle that down to the 65 and older crowd, we find that the direct medical costs totaled $1.8 billion. Dental hygiene saves about 21% of those cases, so the potential savings is $378,000. This is that's pretty substantial, $378,000. And then we talk about the other consequences here, where COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, exacerbations increase with the amount of oral biofilm and low toothbrushing times. And that the COPD is just one piece of that, because people with root decay have a higher chance of having heart problems than those who do not have root decay. So all of this together is starting to really make an indictment for the way that things are happening right now. And then everybody's like, oh my God, but what about the money? It's going to cost so much money. And the Cigna study here showed that people with diabetes, who are also have a higher incidence of problem with oral care and long-term care, saved over $2,000 in medical costs. So let's take a look at this big picture here and do another little arithmetic kind of round. If we assume that approximately 30% of the residents have diabetes of these 1.5 million people, we have about 450,000 residents with diabetes. If we multiply by 2,000 as opposed to the $2,000 that were saved by these at-large people on dental care, $2,000 instead of the $2,400, we come up with $900 million saved in downline medical costs for diabetes. So the $900 million divided by the 16,000 care facilities comes up to $56,000 per facility. Savings, not cost, savings. And then you find out that a dental hygienist only makes $46,000 a year, a mean of $46,000 a year. Now we have money left over at these facilities. These are saved dollars, and that's just in diabetes. So now you take that $375,000 saved in pneumonia that we calculated, and now we're talking about $1 billion saved by having a dental hygienist on board, and we know there are plenty of hygienists. And their education covers almost 3,000 hours of curriculum hours. We have to be on a waiting list for at least a year. Most of them are 2 years. And during that time, we're taking college courses, which gives us baccalaureate degree level number of credits, but only an associate's degree when we're finished with the program. So another health insurance company called United Healthcare found in their paper that's called Medical Dental Integration Study, was published in March of 2013, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease had savings in annual medical costs of over $1,000 in people who had their teeth cleaned by a professional dental hygienist. More plaque on teeth, remember, translates to higher rate of COPD. Congestive heart failure. Also, people with congestive heart failure also saved a pile of money by having their teeth professionally cleaned. People, almost 1,000 people in that United Healthcare paper, who were not compliant with their medical care, saved almost $8,000 annually in downline medical costs, not just dental costs, congestive heart failure. Of the people that were in that group, there were 1,300 compliant patients, and they saved almost $9,000 annually. So that's an astonishing amount of savings. And we know that dental hygienists are everywhere. They're very pervasive. The workforce is ready, willing, and able. And this paper here from 2014 showed that even the dentists are realizing that dental hygienists need to be better assimilated within the total healthcare team in hospitals and residential facilities because it can positively impact the suffering, morbidity, mortality, and associated aspiration pneumonias. So we have a little bit of support even from the dental association. But we also know that we only need to brush these teeth every week in order to get some real care. So thanks for joining me again today. I'm very appreciative that you hang with me. I invite you to subscribe to the website at crosslinkradio.com if you're listening on Stitcher, and share these episodes with your friends because I think, well, I like to think that they're important enough to share, and this information is not stuff that I see very many other places. So have a great rest of the day, and we'll talk again on Wednesday with The Sugar Show. Wondering how to improve your oral systemic practice? Join me, Shirley Gutkowski, in my guided mastermind. Each one-month mastermind tackles a single topic that's easy to implement because you and your colleagues plan it and implement it together. 1 month, one topic, affordable. Contact me by email at shirley@crosslinkradio.com for more information or to sign up.
If you enjoy the content and point of view, please leave a favorable review on Stitcher, iTunes, or Blog Talk Radio. To have Shirley be your personal oral health coach, you can reach out to her via email, shirley@crosslinkradio.com.